vehicle. And it gets even better. For the first time ever, we have 1.9% 84-month financing plus a rebate on select new Jeeps. Talk about a low payment. This is the real deal. We have great deals on the last few remaining 2014 Hyundais with their legendary warranty, and our used cars are constantly ranked as best buys. Hurry in, because the best vehicles always go first, and it's time to go hands-free. Halfway between Barrie and Montpelier on U.S. Route 302, where we always make it easy.
At Mustang Dodge Hyundai, we make it easy.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. Another beautiful day yesterday and another beautiful one today. Thank you for spending part of your morning with us. Another great week of programming coming your way. Coming up on the program today in about an hour, we're going to be joined by a guy named David Bro, who lives in California. David's a really interesting guy. He's been spending now years standing on the same street corner in Berkeley, California, with a notepad asking people to give their definition of the word compassion. So we'll be he's actually up in Burlington today. We're going to be joining him by phone coming up at about 10:15. No White House report today. They've decided to take Columbus Day off. So I'll keep you apprised of what's going on. Our phone numbers on the program, you can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. A couple of programming notes for you among the topics we'll delve into later this week. The Corrections Commissioner Andy Polito joins us. We're going to preview a conference on endangered species, and we're going to get into a very deep discussion about the ramifications of online porn. So that's some of the topics coming your way this week. Again, our phone numbers are 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. We begin the week. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith, who's joining us here live in our studios. Mr. Speaker, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here, Mark.
How are you?
I'm good, actually. It was a wonderful weekend. I got a chance to hike up Mount Elmore with a group of young kids. And then yesterday I spent the day door-to-door campaigning. And the evening I went to a benefit for Salvation Farms. So it was a great day, great weekend.
So did you run into any voters on the top of Mount Elmore shaking people down up there?
The kids that I was with were certainly not old enough to vote. And I did run into a couple of voters. Not sure whether they were voting for me or not, though.
Do you know when you run into somebody if they're a supporter or not a supporter and how they react to you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can never actually be sure what somebody's doing in the voting booth. Even if they're nice to you or they're mean to you, if they're mean to you, they may actually vote for you. If they're nice to you, they may just figure they should be nice to you outside of the voting booth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have a pretty good sense of it. You have a pretty good sense of it when they put their signs on the lawn or put someone else's signs on the lawn. But, you know, my view is that I represent all of the people of my district, whether they vote for me or not. And I'm not going to ignore the people who may have a different political persuasion or are concerned about other things. You know, I represent the district.
What are you hearing?
Well, I am hearing a uneasiness. I think that this is similar to what you hear from people around the country. I was actually just talking to the Speaker of the House in New Hampshire yesterday, and she was saying that people in New Hampshire are uneasy about the economy, sort of the world environment. I think the overlay of what's happening in the world with, you know, ISIL, Ebola, sort of some uncertainty in the financial markets and economic concerns, I think is creating a real uneasiness, not only here, but around the country. And I think that's playing out when I have conversations with people.
Mm-hmm. So when they talk about specifics, then what do you hear?
When I hear about property taxes, I hear about concerns about jobs, I hear about concerns about drugs and heroin, and I hear about healthcare. So those are sort of the big four.
Mm-hmm. If you want to join our conversation, you can at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Let's talk about healthcare for a moment here. Actually, first, I'll have you think about this. This guest that we're having coming on in an hour, by the time we get done here, we're going to be looking for a definition from you of the word compassion. If you want to do it now, you can. If you want to think about it, you can too.
Boy, you're putting me on the spot here.
I know.
Compassion is not associated frequently with the word lawyer, which I am. But I think that, you know, when I think about it, it's doing
it's
something.
It's always associated with politicians, though.
Well, there's a question of whether it's faux compassion or real compassion. But I think of somebody who's compassionate as somebody who will do something for someone, even if they're outside of the spotlight, because they know that it's the right thing to do, and they care that that person needs to be taken care of, and they're willing to do it no matter what the consequences are.
All right, good. That's a pretty good definition. Let's talk about healthcare. Let's assume for a moment you get reelected. You're going to obviously pursue the speakership.
That's my hope. Yeah.
Okay. I think it really boils down to this. Is it really possible for the Vermont legislature to pass a bill that's going to include $2 billion in taxes to remove medical premiums?
Well, I think that there are a couple questions here. One of the things that I hear from people out there is that they're not completely satisfied with the current system, and it's not just the healthcare exchange, but it's also products that are outside of the healthcare exchange, and they're concerned about the increasing share of the costs that they have to pick up, particularly in high deductible plans. And it's, you know, it's preventing people from taking their kids to go to the doctor because they're not sure whether they can pay for it under their high deductible plans. So, you know, I think that people like the idea of having health insurance that would be available to them just because they're a Vermonter. So that they would have the access to healthcare. But you have identified, I think, the big challenge, which is how do you take the way that we're financing healthcare now and change it? Because there will be winners and losers, and there will be some disruption to the system. So the question is, do you do it all at once, or do you phase it in over time? And we haven't seen what the administration has proposed yet, but my sense is that they'll probably put something on the table that is a complete change at one point in time, and we'll have to figure out whether that's something that we can do in the legislature.
Okay, but that sort of overall question, because when you talk about winners and losers, it seems to me that some of the losers in this too could be people that are in the legislature. That people could interpret this as this huge tax increase, not really take into account there's been a reduction in premiums. You know, I can imagine what some of the news stories are going to be portraying Vermont like.
Yeah. No, I think that that's very true. There's no doubt about the fact that this would be a huge political lift. And it will be a huge political lift, but it has to also be the right policy. And I think that we have to see what the administration puts on the table, understand what the disruption looks like, whether it makes sense, and at that point in time, see whether we can move it forward. And I said this the other day. I mean, we're not just going to rubber stamp something. I think that we have to really understand that what we think the transition will be better than what we have now. So that's that's my commitment to Vermonters. If I return to the House and if I return to be Speaker of the House, is, you know, we're going to take a really close look at this and make sure it's the right thing to do. So that's where we're going.
Sounds really like you're talking about a phase in. I haven't really heard anybody talking in that sort of way.
I don't know whether that's the direction that we'll head in, but I think that, you know, we have to think about all of the different options. And, you know, the landscape right now is colored by the fact that we had a really rocky rollout of the Vermont Health Connect, not just here in the state of Vermont, but certainly here in the state of Vermont. It was true all around the country. And I think that people are understandably and justifiably skeptical about whether we could move forward on a bigger project.
You know, I'm glad to hear you acknowledge that, because I was speaking yesterday or last week with Governor Shumlin, and he really rejects this idea that because there have been problems with the healthcare website, that that would undermine people's confidence in something down the road here. So why do you feel the way you do?
I feel the way that I do based on conversations that I've had with a lot of different people. And I don't think that you could sit and watch how all of this unfolded and feel comfortable that under our current processes that we have the capacity to get it right the next time. I think that, you know, I am very pleased that Dr. Chen is now the Secretary of the Agency of Human Services. And I think Lawrence Miller has a lot of qualities to make sure that operationally we could move forward with something more effectively the next time. But you know, this is a huge lift, and we have to make sure that we would have the right expertise to do it. And I think that the experience that we just had suggests that we may not have had the right expertise.
There have been proposals in the past. I can remember a couple just a few years back in some changes the administration wanted to make where they clearly did not let you or Senator Campbell or other legislative leaders know what they were thinking about prior to disclosing it. Are they actively bringing you in on this discussion about healthcare financing and what the package would be?
I haven't had any real substantive conversations with them recently, and I attribute that to the fact that they are still having some internal discussions about the direction that they want to go. I would expect that I will have conversations with them in the next couple weeks or month or so, because I don't think that this is something that can be successful if the first time we see it is sometime in January. This is really difficult stuff. I think it's going to require us to get real buy-in from the people of the state of Vermont and from legislators themselves. And I've made it clear to the administration that if they want to move forward, they are going to have to build consensus even before we start the legislative session.
Okay. How are you going to do how's that going to happen?
Well, I think they have to reach out to individual legislators. I think it's going to require sort of a campaign-like operation where they're talking to individual legislators, getting the sense from them about what their concerns are and trying to address those concerns. And I think that they're going to have to do that with Vermonters as well.
Do you think they should roll out what the plan is before the session starts?
I think that they should roll out a plan when they think that it's been well vetted and properly vetted. I think that, to me, is the most important thing. If they rush a plan out that doesn't actually add up or doesn't work, I think that that will be fatal to the plan.
Okay. I'm wondering, though, this idea you have that they would be working with individual lawmakers means that, in all likelihood, the details and what the financing plan wouldn't stay under wraps.
My sense is that all of the details would not stay under wraps. I think that.
So why not roll it out is what I'm thinking.
I think what you would do, and I think that this happens in policy all the time. I think it's happened under other governors and other legislatures or legislatures. Sort of run things by people to see what their reaction is. And based on that reaction, you say, okay, well, maybe that's not going to fly. Maybe we do something different. So that would be my expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people who are there are all seasoned. They know what they're doing. You know, Jeb is there until January. The governor's been around the block before. Lawrence has been in a position dealing with legislators for the last 4 years. Liz Miller is same. They have Floyd Neese in the office. They have people who understand how you would work with legislators to make something work.
So is the idea that the legislature would work with whatever the administration puts out, or are you going to actually try to come up with something from the ground up on your own?
I think that we would like to see what the administration comes up with first, And if it's something that doesn't work, but we think that there are reasons to go forward, then there is a possibility that we would move forward on our own with other ideas.
Okay. I mean, you have to have thought about this some in your own life. I mean, is there a way to make the Rubik's Cube work so that you can get all red on one side, all green on another? I mean, is there a mix here that you can... Is there a mix of taxes that can actually make any kind of sense here?
I think that is the big challenge, because no matter what people say, and I think that they're fair in saying this, we are raising $2.2 billion now. But the way that it's being raised is largely hidden. People don't necessarily see it as starkly as they will if it's raised through the tax structure. And I think that we have to do a better job of helping people understand how healthcare is being paid for now and why moving to another system would be more effective.
Okay, that sounds like almost an educational process, which isn't going to be done quickly. So there's no way you're going to pass a bill, a financing plan in 2015, right?
I don't want to prejudge it, because I don't know what they're going to put down on the table. And I think that it's going to be a difficult lift. I've always said that it would be a difficult lift. And I think it's more important to get it right than to get it done. And so we'll work with whatever the administration puts on the plan or puts on the table. And if that isn't something that will work, and we believe that it ought to move forward, or we ought to move forward with trying to change the system, then we'll look at some alternatives.
244-1777, that's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. How concerned are you that the healthcare website's not going to be up and running in November? Is going all paper and phone going to be acceptable?
I would prefer that the website was up and running now, but what we saw last fall was that there was the capacity to get people into the system through the paper and pen process. And my biggest concern is that people get their health insurance. It's less important how they get it. So as long as the systems are in place so that people can get their health insurance, that they can change the health insurance if their circumstances change, and that they get billed properly, if all of those things can happen without the website, then we'll deal with it. But my hope is that the website will be up and running by November.
2020 hindsight is just that, 2020. Is there anything you would have done differently in the last year here in your role as speaker when it comes to this?
Well, there are a couple things that that I've talked to people about that create some concern for me. One is that clearly the shift from Catamount and some of the VHAP programs to the exchange put people in worse position, people who had health coverage. And I'd like to go back and really understand what that meant, because I'm concerned that people who had access to healthcare before don't have as much health care access now. And I think that, you know, that was a decision that we made based on budgetary pressures and thinking that it wouldn't have a huge impact on people's access. And I think we ought to go back and take a look at that. And I know that there will be people who will say, "I told you so," me and others, if it turns out that it has had an impact on access. But my view is that to be successful, you ought to be willing to go back and take a look at what you did and admit if you made a mistake and you could have done it better. Mm-hmm. And I think there are opportunities to learn there. I think the jury is still out on whether it was appropriate to make the exchange mandatory or voluntary. It's not clear to me, actually, whether it would have made that much of a difference, because the plans that you access under mandatory and voluntary probably would be the same. But in the end, we basically gave a bypass for businesses, so they didn't actually have to go through the exchange. So you know, I think that we need to take a look at that issue as well.
What about this question you were raising before about kids not going to the doctor because of these high deductible plans? Is there anything you can do? Is there anything that can be done about that?
I don't know if there's anything that we can do about that, because that exists both for people who go through the exchange and go outside of the exchange. You know, we have my wife and I and our family have a high deductible plan. It does make you think about, you know, are you going to go to the doctor? And, you know, how much do you have to pay? And, you know, is the deductible been run down yet or not? And it does make people think about it. And in some ways, that's a good thing. But right. if it's actually preventing people from taking their kids to the doctor, well, that is not what we want to have happen. So I think we need to take a closer look at that.
The governor, we were talking the other day about who would be in and who would be out in this new health care system. And I was asking him about people that are on Medicare, because it seems to me that those are people that aren't going to want to have any sort of income tax hit because they're already getting Medicare. Mm-hmm. And he said that people that are on Medicare would be carved out, that mm-hmm. they would not have to pay, and that the only contribution they would have to make is if they got their supplemental insurance through Vermont. Does that seem reasonable to you? Is that can the system afford to have that many people not making a quote-unquote contribution?
I think it is reasonable, but I think one of the challenges that we face, and this is kind of technical, is how big the risk pool is if we carve out a bunch of populations. Because as you get a smaller risk pool, if you have spikes in the costs of people that are within that risk pool, you can have real fluctuations in the cost of the insurance or the cost of the program. And so, you know, Medicare does a good job now, and I think most people who are on Medicare would prefer to stay on Medicare.
Right.
And probably we don't need to take that entire population on, but it does mean that you'll have a smaller risk pool, and that can affect the price of the healthcare.
You hear from more people than I do, and we all do. Are you hearing that there are doctors leaving Vermont because of this discussion about healthcare reform?
I have asked particular people who are in the healthcare profession, whether there are people leaving the state because of this. And I do actually think there are some doctors who are leaving the state because of this. I also think there are doctors that are coming in because of it as well, and that see this as an opportunity. For a lot of people, the business of medicine is not what they want to have to deal with. They're in the profession because they actually want to actually take care of patients. And the business side is something that they don't really like. And so the idea of having a profession that wasn't driven by the business side, but that was driven by providing care, I think is attractive to a lot of people who go into the profession.
244-1777, our local number, toll free 877-291-8255. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll get into the other third rail, property taxes. We'll be back with Speaker Smith right after this.
Formula Nissan in Barrie is the fastest-growing Nissan dealer in Vermont. And Vice President Jack Castellaneta says people are driving from Burlington, Lebanon, even St. Jay to save up to $6,700 off the MSRP of new Nissans. Jack, what's the catch?
There's no catch. It's just one of the ways we make it easy to do business here. A better selection of new Nissans, huge savings you won't find anywhere else, and pricing that nobody can touch.
No crazy fine print. Formula Nissan cuts the baloney and saves you money.
We're keeping it's simple, and simpler means cheaper. Don't make a $3,000, $4,000, or even $6,000 mistake somewhere else. Get more for your trade and huge discounts direct from the factory at Formula Nissan.
0% financing up to 60 months. Huge factory discounts and rebates that make it simple to drive a new Nissan. But it all ends October 31st.
Only at Formula Nissan on the Barrie Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at FormulaNissan.com. Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
On approved credit, offer ends 10/31/14.
Trust Invisible Fence Brand to protect your pets at home. Our pet safety experts will customize a guaranteed containment solution that keeps your pet safe and ensures you and your family total peace of mind at a tenth of the cost of traditional fencing. Invisible Fence Brand, the brand vets recommend most for dog safety and freedom.
Your local Invisible Fence dealer, Invisible Fence of North Country and Plainfield, 454-8563.
This is Washington County State Senator Anthony Polina. I know healthcare costs and property taxes are real problems, but not the only ones. I know because we pay the same bills. Everything costs more, but real income is actually lower than it was 10 years ago. Clearly, what we're doing isn't working. We need to get serious about good jobs and decent wages. To help, I sponsored a new law directing 10% of the state's cash, that's our money, to local investments and jobs and things we need, like affordable housing and renewable energy. Another has the state use our tax dollars to hire and buy local, just like you and I do, keeping our money here at home, supporting local businesses and families. So these may not solve the whole problem, but they show we can get good things done and put our money to work for us, not Wall Street, and start fixing our economy while doing right by our hardworking families. I'm State Senator Anthony Polina. I paid for this ad, and I'd appreciate your vote.
Hi, I'm Al McCarron from Waterbury Service Center. I find that if I do a cold weather check on your vehicle, it saves a lot of hassle down the road. Customers like that I check the tires, tire pressures, their weapon blades, check antifreeze and oil levels, belts and hoses, change fuel filters, and if your car is over 5 years old, I recommend a new thermostat. Makes a big difference. Call us at 244-7202. We're your friends at Waterbury Service Center right here on Main Street. Check us out on the web, waterburyservicecenter.com.
There's an old expression that 80% of life is just showing up. So what does that say about Jean Shaheen? The union leader asks, quote, "Where is Shaheen?" and says she's hiding from you. Shaheen hasn't held a traditional town hall meeting in almost 2 years, and she's been missing when we needed her in Washington, too. Shaheen sits on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that helps oversee terrorist threats, but Shaheen has skipped nearly half of committee meetings over the past 2 years, even missing an important early warning about the threat of ISIS. Nearly half the time, Shaheen didn't even bother to show up. And now, the world is more dangerous than ever. Jean Shaheen, if she's too busy to show up and keep New Hampshire safe, why should we ever send her back to Washington? Ending Spending Action Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. EndingSpendingFund.com.
244-1777 is our local number. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. We've been talking with the Speaker of the House, Shep Smith. Let's head to Sheldon. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I think it's clear that we are not going to have single-payer health care. I think the governor is saying it loud and clear because it's going to be bad for Vermont businesses. However, we're still going to have a terrible problem as far as funding health care goes. And so my solution to the problem is people have got to say no to cost shifting. We are not going to pay for cost shifting. The government wanted to put more people into Medicaid, so the hospitals aren't getting enough money for their Medicaid patients, and they're passing that cost on to the paying customer. The Green Mountain Care Board okayed a 7.7% increase to Blue Cross and Blue Shield. That's terrible. And we need to say, no, we're not going to pay that amount and just not pay it. I heard Blue Cross and Blue Shield was funding this ad that's out on TV promoting Republican candidates. But I hear Blue Cross and Blue Shield is also putting out advertisements for the Democrats. And why do they need a 7.7% raise if they have money to do this?
All right, let me get the Speaker to comment on what you've had to say. Thank you, Ruth.
Ruth does identify a real problem, which is the cost shift, and it's a cost shift within the government programs. Medicare tries to reimburse the cost. Medicaid reimbursement is lower than it should be. We would actually have to put a fair amount more general fund money in to get that reimbursement rate up. We did try to do that this year when we had the budget challenges or the reduction that we had to make in July or August. We took that out of the budget. I know that there are a number of people within the Healthcare Committee and the Ways and Means Committee and the Appropriations Committee that are looking at possible ways that we could actually increase Medicaid reimbursement, because if we're going to move forward, we do have to address the cost shift.
Well, you know, the other thing I'm hearing in that, too, though, is if you're fooling around, or not fooling around, if you're adjusting the reimbursement rates, isn't that going to happen under some new system here where there's a bad economic time and then you just start reducing benefits, rates you pay the doctors, et cetera?
I think that is a concern, and it's a legitimate concern, because we have, you know, we do have fluctuations in the budget. I think it exists, though, with insurers as well. I mean, insurers are always trying to adjust down the amount that they are paying for the services. So it's not like this is something that is unique to the government programs. So
the Ruth was also asking about this money that's being spent by this Republican PAC, a national PAC that's spending about $140,000 plus. The Republican State Leadership Committee running ads on TV and radio, urging Vermonters to, quote, vote for a brighter economic future by choosing Republicans. What do you make of this effort?
I was actually, quite frankly, surprised that the National Committee came in. And what I find interesting is they say we're going to have a brighter future if you elect Republican candidates, but they don't actually say what they'll do. They're actually buying about $200,000 worth of time, because they're doing $40,000 of radio for specific Republican Senate candidates as well, and another $20,000 or $25,000 of internet ad buys for Republican Senate candidates throughout the state. So, you know, you look at what has happened where the RSLC has put money into states in the past. They flipped New Hampshire in 2010, putting money into that state. The first order of business one of the first orders of business for the Republican House there was then to repeal universal kindergarten. And it went on from there, a complete voucher program for all schools. They slashed the Medicaid budget. So, you know, what this organization supports and the candidates that they have supported in other states is right out there for everybody to see. They put a lot of money into Wisconsin. They put a lot of money into North Carolina. They like to restrict voting rights. They deal with, you know, they restrict women's health. So it's, I'm not surprised they're coming in, or I guess I was surprised that they're coming in. I think that if people took a look at the record of legislators who have been elected with their support, they would say that they don't reflect Vermont values.
Just a couple of other questions on health care. So if you get down the road here, is there a danger that you could start talking about all this reform in the next year or two? The system is kind of unclear. And at the end, if nothing passes, you got a system that's even worse than what you have today.
I think a lot of the things that are happening that aren't on the finance side are actually going to have some long-term benefits for the state of Vermont. There's significant work being done on payment reform so that there's going to be pay for performance rather than pay for procedure. And I think that that is going to be effective in the long term of bringing the cost curve down so that we're not growing at the rate that we have in the past. And that's work that the Green Mountain Care Board has been doing. And I think it's going to be pretty effective, hopefully, over the long term. So I think that there are going to be a lot of things that have happened that will be helpful for the overall healthcare system, even if we don't move forward with finance.
Do you think Obamacare has been a positive or a negative?
I think that it's given access to healthcare coverage for millions of people around the country, and I think that that has been a positive. There are clearly some indications that some of the policies have brought the rate of growth of healthcare spending down, and I think that's been effective. I think the confusion that has been caused by it has not been helpful, but I think on balance, it has actually been a good thing, because the reality is we have 15% of the people of the United States of America that don't have health care coverage. In a rich country like ours, that is an abomination. And the fact that we actually have chipped away at that through Obamacare, I think, is actually a tribute to the law.
844-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Coming up at 10:15, we'll talk with David Bro, who lives in California, visiting here in Vermont, talking about the issue of compassion. Moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-321-0815 and on the web at gmavt.net. I want to ask you about property taxes. First, let's talk about some politics here for a moment. Dean Corin is running in the lieutenant governor's race as a progressive, also has the support of the Democratic Party, running against the Republican incumbent Phil Scott. One poll's been out. Dean Corin appears to be really far behind here. Is he getting, like, zero support from the Democrats here or what?
No, he isn't getting zero support from the Democrats. I think that he's been going to a lot of Democratic events. The state committee supported him. I think it's a reflection of the fact that, you know, Vermont likes its incumbents. And Phil has been out and about in the state of Vermont. And he's well-liked as the president of the Senate. One of the benefits is you don't have to vote very often, so you don't have as extensive a record to look at. So, and Phil's a good guy, and people don't like to throw good guys out of office.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I guess I'm surprised how little support he's getting from the Dems. Are you?
Well, he is
organizationally.
Well, you know, I can't speak to exactly what kind of support he's getting because I'm not in the office day to day at the Democratic Party. I'm actually focusing more sort of on my own campaign. So I can't speak to what kind of support he's getting. But I think he has actually gotten support from the Democratic Party.
Okay, but you're in a leadership position in the Democratic Party. So, okay, if he's getting
support... I'm pretty far down the list on the leadership.
If he's getting support from Democrats, then why is he getting so little support from voters?
I think that it's a reflection of the fact that Vermonters like their incumbents and they like Phil.
Let's go to Stowe. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Mark, and to your guests. I just wanted to make a comment. You were talking about the Republican funding here a minute ago. It seems to me that if you don't like the way the politics is going in Montpelier right now, the only alternative is to change, and we need to know who the candidates are who could change some of that. If you don't like the way the health plan's going, listen to what the other party has to say. And I think that's my only comment I have to make. I'm not opposed to money coming in from anywhere that's going to give us a better, broader view of what's going on.
Okay.
I didn't say that I was necessarily opposed to the money coming in. I just think that it's appropriate for people to look at what that money has helped accomplish in other states. And, you know, money is part of politics. That's the way it is. And I don't like it. One of the beautiful things actually about Vermont is that to a large degree at the House and the Senate level, money doesn't actually determine the races. Going door to door, being in your community, talking to your neighbors actually influences how the election goes out. So I think that we still have something special here in Vermont.
Thank you for your call at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. What do you make of the governor's race?
It seems to me that that Scott got in late and is still trying to organize his campaign. There's clearly a split within the Republican Party. And, you know, my sense is that with governor's races, that you have some more challenges as your governor over time because you've made decisions that will have some people happy and some people not happy. And I think that is reflected in the numbers that Governor Shumlin has.
In the lieutenant governor's race, back on this question about Dean Corin.
Can't we talk about property taxes?
Yeah, we will. that, you know, he's a progressive, and clearly progressives and Democrats have always not had a kumbaya kind of relationship. To what extent do you think Dean Corin is hurt by being a progressive in terms of getting Democrat support?
I think that there is still some lingering bitterness from years and years ago. There were definitely clashes between the progressives and Democrats, and I think Dean was involved in those back then. But my sense is that people have tried to put that aside. If they agree with his policies, I think people have been willing to support him.
Has he gone too much all in on one issue with health care?
I think that he may have, because to be honest with you, when I'm out door-to-door campaigning, healthcare is number two or number three on people's lists. Number one tends to be jobs in the economy and people's worry about, you know, what is the future of the country and the future of Vermont's economy.
Can I guess number two?
And property taxes. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So with there being so much focus on healthcare, is there even bandwidth? Is there room here to even discuss property taxes in the legislature?
It will be, if not the top priority, the top two priorities in the House. So my view is that it's clear that we have some challenges both in education finance, but in the amount of money that we're spending. And this has to be an issue that is at the top of the list for the House next session.
Okay, in terms of money coming in, is it time for a new formula?
I think that we need to look at some of the other proposals that have been out there. Jim Condon, representative from Colchester, has one that is based on moving more towards an income-based funding formula for residential property owners. I think that's worth vetting. There have some been some challenges about that particular system in the past, particularly the transitional costs. There's also some concerns about the stability of the revenue source, but I think it's definitely worth looking at. I think that any funding change is also going to have to be coupled with some recognition that we cannot continue to grow the amount of spending, given our decline of students, at the same rate that we have been growing. So, and let me just stop and step back for a second. Overall, Vermont has a good education system. In fact, it's one of the top ones in the country. And we don't want to lose that. We'd like to actually make it even better, but also acknowledge that given the declining population, we need to figure out some efficiencies that we can get within the system.
Okay. Like what?
Well, I think that we're going to continue to have to look at ways that we can change the staffing ratios. The staffing ratios right now are like, I think it's one adult for every 4.3 students or 4.4. If you change that to just 1 to 5, you could actually save $70 million worth in the system. So I think that we have to figure out ways that we can change those staffing ratios. And I am all ears. Any ideas? I'm working right now with the Vermont Business Roundtable, School Boards Association, superintendents, the Agency of Education, the Community Foundation. We're all working together to fashion ideas that will be successful for this issue next year.
Mm-hmm. So is there a need for incentives for communities to do this? And if so, what are the incentives that can be offered?
I think that if we could actually put on the table incentives rather than carrot instead of stick, I think that would be effective. I don't think that we've been able to figure out what we could do within the current financing system, and I think that's one thing that we may have to take a look at.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking with somebody, actually one of your predecessors, Gay Simonton, over the weekend. I ran into her at the farmer's market. She was telling me about what's going on in the Chittenden East District, mm-hmm. where they're looking at it, at the end of this, it sounded to me as though you could have 55 school board members down to about 15.
Yep. So
What do you know about that?
Well, in Chittenden East right now, they have school boards for each one of the towns in Chittenden East. And I think it's Jericho, Underhill, Huntington, Bolton, and Richmond. I think those are the five towns. And what's interesting is I think that maybe 6th grade through 12 actually goes to Mount Mansfield Union High School. So that already has one board.
Right.
And the question is, well, why do you need boards for the K through 6 in each one of those communities? And is there some way that you could be more efficient by just having one board for all of the towns. Now, the thing that they're doing there is they're going out and educating the communities and relying on people making the decision amongst themselves. And I'll be very curious to see whether it passes in November. I think that it, if it does pass, it actually could provide a model for the rest of the state.
Mm-hmm. Is that it? So it, you say that this is going to be one of the top two priorities. So is it a 2015 issue? Is it a 2015-2016 issue? How would you describe it?
I think it is a 2015 issue. I think that we have to hit it head on when we get there. It will be a top priority in the House.
Okay. I know you guys can walk and chew gum at the same time, but health care and property tax reform in the same year sounds pretty ambitious.
Well, it may require us to be doing things differently, creating different committees than we've done in the past. So we're talking internally about ways that we could structure ourselves so that we could walk and chew gum at the same time.
Okay. So would that mean a new committee being formed just on property taxes or something?
Well, the question is whether we would move more of the finance aspect of healthcare finance into healthcare, or whether we might move more of the education finance aspect into education finance, with ways and means being sort of the second line of review. So we're talking internally about those things. You know, those are ideas that have been floated before. And I think that we need to get some consensus. But, you know, it's hard to actually move forward with those ideas when you don't know what the composition of the House is going to be, and you don't know what the leadership looks like.
Does the healthcare and education funding in any way interact?
Clearly, healthcare costs are a driver in the education cost system. So, yes, the cost side does interact. And I do believe that the financing will actually interact as well. I mean, you can't do a change in education finance and think that it's divorced completely from what you might be doing in the healthcare finance area.
Mm-hmm. But I've heard you and others, and the governor included, there seems to be a lot of focus and emphasis on people, the ability to pay, which sounds, and you mentioned income taxes too. You know, Vermont could have this income tax system that might be fair, but it might be viewed as incredibly onerous, again, particularly from the outside.
Yep. And I think that is the challenge that we have, particularly with regard to the Condon proposal, is, you know, how much would it add to the overall marginal tax rate? And I know that people who are looking at that are very sensitive to that issue and are trying to figure out ways that it wouldn't have too much of an impact. And it may mean that, you know, the Condon proposal, as I remember it, has sort of a small increment of property taxes for residential, maybe a 40-cent rate. And then the rest of it is based on your income.
Mm-hmm. But the real problem, you would agree, is spending?
I think the challenge for us is that we are spending about as much as we can, given the declining number of students. And it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing if it was increasing, if we had increasing student numbers. But right now, with a declining student population, the fact that we're continuing to grow spending in education at the rate that we are for legitimate reasons on local levels, I think is problematic.
It looks like another huge deficit going into the year.
Mm-hmm.
This is becoming probably pretty familiar for you, but this one's big. I mean, talking almost, what, $100 million?
My sense is that this number is going to change on a daily basis until we get back into the legislature. And I'm not sure whether it'll be $100 million when we get there. It certainly is going to be a difficult problem to face. But I'm convinced that we'll be able to deal with it.
But each year, is it true each year this is more difficult to do? Or is that a myth?
Each year it is more difficult to do because I don't think we have as many one-time monies sitting out there. And I think that what it suggests is that, you know, we have a structural challenge in front of us and we need to figure out a way to address the structural challenge and figure out, you know, hey, we're going to have some declining money from the feds. What are we going to do and what aren't we going to do as state government?
And on the jobs question, is there anything the Vermont legislature can do on this?
I'm a firm believer that our role really is about building out infrastructure and making sure that the infrastructure that's necessary for a 21st century economy is in place. And that's both physical infrastructure, but also human capital. So we make sure that Vermonters are well educated and have the skills that they need for the workforce. And then we make sure that you have good roads, good bridges, and the telecommunications infrastructure that's necessary for a 21st century economy.
Okay. How do you pay for all that?
Well, we actually have been putting the amount of money necessary for our transportation infrastructure. And I feel pretty good about the amount of work that's being done now. We have the largest transportation budget in the history of the state of Vermont that's being implemented right now. And you can see it throughout the state. I mean, there's work going on everywhere. The funny thing is people always want work done. And then when it's done, it's kind of a problem because, you know, it makes it harder to get from A to B.
Right.
So the second thing with regard to the telecommunications infrastructure, the question is where do we have gaps? And to the extent that we still have some bonding authority from the VTA, is that money that we can use to help fill in those gaps? We don't have a lot of cash just sitting around to help build that stuff out. But, you know, we could perhaps put discrete money to areas that are a real need and make sure that that moves forward.
How big a hit do you think it's going to be for Vermont money coming from the feds?
I think over time it is going to be a challenge for us. It's certainly been a challenge for, I think, you talk to a friend of mine who is the Speaker of the House in Alaska, the fact that there's less money coming from the feds is really starting to impact their economy, places like Virginia. It is going to be a challenge for us. I don't think it's going to be the challenge that it'll be for states like those.
What does your New Hampshire counterpart say about things like that?
She and I did not talk about that. You know, I think the northeastern states, they don't have as much military money coming into the states. They don't have as, you know, large bases and stuff like that. And I think the places where that kind of population is, that they're really going to have a tough go of it.
Mm-hmm. You seriously considered not running again? How close were you to actually not running?
Pretty close. Yep. I mean, you know, I love the job and I love serving the job, but I also, there are two things. One, I don't think that you should have the job forever. And probably my opponents will use that for me this year.
What a great campaign ad.
Yeah, I know. I actually, probably my wife already gave that one to him. And the other thing is, you know, it does impact, you know, family time and work time. And so had long conversation with people at work to see whether it would be okay with them. And had long conversations with my wife and my kids about whether they were okay with me trying to serve another 2 years. And ultimately, people were supportive of it. And I decided to run.
You getting burned out on the job, though?
I love the job. I mean, so there are some challenges because you hear the same things over and over and over again. And making sure that you actively engage and you can empathize with those things, you really have to make sure that you're bringing new energy to it. And, you know, I want to make sure that I can continue to do that. And as soon as I can't do it, then I'm gone.
Yeah, you hear the same things and you get asked the same darn questions over and over. So. But if, you know, if you have empathy, you know what that also means that you have, in addition to that, starts with a C.
Compassion.
Passion.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate your time this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Shap Smith is the Speaker of the House running for re-election. We're going to take a break here for news. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Our White House crew is from Talk Radio News Service is taking today off, so we'll head right to your phone calls. Love to hear from you at 244-1777, our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. We'll also be talking compassion with David Breaux. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, 96.5 in Barrie, Montpelier, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier.